Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
A look at crime and criminal justice in Memphis tonight on Behind the Headlines. Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. We are joined tonight by Josh Spickler, Executive Director of Just City. Josh, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Eric.
Along with Harold Collins, Administrator of the Shelby County Office of Reentry. Harold, thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Along with Bill Dries, Reporter with the Daily Memphian. I wanted to get have a conversation about crime and about criminal justice and wanted to get you both on because in various ways, you all have worked with the crime problem. And Harold, back to when you were in the DA's office, I think focused on with Bill Gibbons on a special assistant focused on teen crime at the Crime Commission, now Office of Reentry. And Josh, you've been an advocate for lots of criminal justice reform at the jail, at all kinds of things. And it's been a summer, I guess we're in the fall now, but particularly in the summer, of a kind of national and local conversation about the relationship between police and particularly Black communities. And that conversation happens at a time when in many cities in this country, including Memphis, crime is up. In some cases up, I think what in Memphis, violent crime, including homicides and aggravated assault, up 10% almost between January and June. And so Josh, how do you look at these conversations and these, whether it's the protests or it's the defending of police, in reconciling that with the crime problem? Where are we? What do we need to do from your point of view?
Yeah, Eric, thanks. I think fundamentally that question is about trust, the relationship to police officers and the communities that they police. And frankly, in this community, I think there's probably not a lot of disagreement over the statement that relationship is broken, that there is very little trust between the Memphis Police Department and the community that they are policing. They lack transparency. They lack accountability. Fortunately, this year has been one free of major issues, major police involved shootings. I think, we've had a lot of great reporting recently from the Daily Memphian and other media outlets in this community that have shown us just appalling things on camera, appalling things on paper that Memphis Police Department officers have been involved in. And it's taken journalists years to uncover that. And I think that's a very good example of the problem, is that any sort of attempt to hold them accountable, any sort of attempt to bring transparency to that department is met with stiff resistance. And we have to solve that trust problem before we can talk about how to use police officers in our community to address our crime issues.
I'm gonna get Harold in. I'll come back to much of what you just touched on, but I will let both you guys just kind of have a minute here to talk. Harold, for you, when you look at this, again, former city councilman, you've been in criminal justice directly or indirectly in many roles, that issue of policing, more police, less police, and the role of police, particularly in Black communities, how do you view that?
Well, several ways. Number one is the policing in the Black community or in Memphis alone has been the same way for decades. It's amazing to me when you start thinking about our city and how we have evolved as a community, but the policing method has remained the same. We've had numerous police directors and they have used the same processes to police in communities, to evaluate crime, to promote their programming, and that has not changed. And so as we have evolved, policing has not. The other piece to this is when you talk about more police or less police, what we found is, and what we see is, every time there is a issue, the answer is more police. And so that is the default. And I think, again, because our community has begun to evolve, policing has not. And so their whole thing is, whatever the concern is, the answer is more police. It's not looking at what the real issues are, because policing, we're always right. And because we're always right, then the best way to solve that that problem in the community is to add more police.
Let me, you know, I see it in our comment section. I see it on social media. I see it, you know, it's a common response, and it's a kind of visceral response that people have when there are conversations about whether it's defunding the police or, you know, the police are doing things badly. People will say, and I'll stay with you for a second, Harold. Yeah, but who do you want to call if your house is being broken into, if you're, if someone's being assaulted, if some terrible thing is happening in your home or to your family or friends? You don't want the police to be there? Is that, people hear what you say, and I think they come to that conclusion often.
First of all, I think in more times than not, I think it is what the intent of the wording is. People in my circles do not want to defund the police because we know how important they are. But what we see and what we talk about is what other ways could have been utilized or deployed to resolve an issue. Certainly we want police to come when there's a crime that has been committed. And realistically, police can't be everywhere to stop crime. But there are opportunities for our community to look at what we can do to prevent some crimes and to shore up some of the problems or concerns that our citizens have before police are in a call. For example, you know, the police department is known for its CTI program. And many times officers who show up at scenes are not trained in that particular process. So then you have to call other officers from other areas to come and utilize that skill that they have trained. And so those are some of the things that people see and want to see done more in our community. It's not defunding the police, it's utilizing them in a different way.
Back to you, Josh, and then I'll go to Bill. Josh, I think there are people out there who would respond to what you said and say, well, but yeah, we at the Daily Memphian and other places have written about some acts that are bad actors within the police department. And I think any public official, anybody like needs to be held to account. So I stand by those stories. I think people push back though and say the overwhelming number of police are good, hardworking, well-intentioned people. The overwhelming number of encounters between police and citizens are by the book, peaceful, do not involve violence or anything that or misbehavior in any way. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I mean, obviously most of the men and women on the police department are good people. Most of the encounters are good encounters. I do agree with that. What I think we're finding in some of this really great reporting, and frankly, as an attorney who's been representing people charged with crimes in this community for 20 years, I've heard a lot of stories from the people that I'm representing. I can't believe them all. I can't disbelieve them all. And the things that I see, the themes in these interactions that we're learning about, that we've known about for years, these so-called bad cops, these incidents that do make the news, there are themes and there are ways of speaking to people that we're seeing in one of these recent videos in particular that are very familiar to the stories that I've been hearing for 20 years, right? And there's a segment of this community that is treated probably more times than not that way. And so I don't think it's wise for us to discount the idea that the entire police department represents something to a vast swath of our community. And I think there's evidence to back that up. And I think that there's clearly, as Harold put it, an attitude in that police department that we can do no wrong, that we'll handle our own accountability, we'll handle our own problems, We don't need the media asking for things. We don't need advocacy groups asking us to do things differently. We don't need the community's input. We hear that all the time in the criminal legal system. We hear it from the police department. We hear it from the district attorney. And that is no way to keep us safe. And so, you know, I don't believe that all the entire police department is full of people who are out there, you know, preying on others. But I do think there's a culture of cover up. I think there's a culture of protecting each other. And that makes for a less safe city.
Bill.
So at this point, the Strickland administration is in the second phase of looking at police reforms. The first part of this, I think it's fair to say, has basically been, we're already doing some of the reforms that are being talked about and discussed nationally. Harold, from your vantage point, are we on the road to police reform with what's being done within the department now, or is there a more pronounced departure from that path in order?
Well, first of all, Bill, let me say, I'm not privy to what those reforms that Mayor Strickland and Director Rollins are putting forth, because I'm no longer a quote-unquote public servant officially. So I don't have the inroads of to what they're trying to accomplish. But what I can say is, if any of those reforms do not include more transparency, the ability to allow the Citizen Law Enforcement Review Board to really, really do its job, to utilize more of their specialized training when going to scenes when there is persons who have mental illness or mental disorders in play, then you get much of the same. I can say to you that I was sort of awestruck when the first proposal was we need 2,800 police officers. And I don't know if that was a trial balloon or not, because I do remember one of the reasons we are in this predicament with the crime rate, quote unquote, is we've lost over 400 officers for what I consider to be bad planning. And so to add 800 new people requires more money to pay on pensions, insurance, healthcare, and all those things, which was the catalyst to reduce the number in the first place. So, but again, I go back to saying I'm not privy to what they're doing and where they stand with proposals.
Mm-hmm. Josh, from your perspective, is the path to police reform pretty much a continuation of what the police department has been doing to date?
No, I don't think so, Bill. I don't think so at all. I think that we need, that this country, or this, I'm sorry, this community needs something that looks much more like what happened in Camden, New Jersey. I mean, I think, you know, Harold talked about this solution to every problem being more police officers, and that is an investment, right? That is an investment that this community has been making for decades in the Memphis Police Department to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And that department has developed into a modern urban police department that includes all the things that modern urban police departments include: lots of officers, lots of precincts, lots of cars, guns, bulletproof vests, and things like that. It looks more like a military than it does a member, an institutional member of this community. And we need a police department that looks more like a member of this community. It looks more like MIFA, for example. Knows the people that it polices, gets out of cars, understands the neighborhoods and the streets that these officers are patrolling. And we're not going to get there with these reforms. We're only going to get there with something bold and visionary. And I think that means that this new police director search that we're about to undergo needs to include that as its goal, to bring someone into this community that has a bold vision for how to police in a place like Memphis, a place racked with poverty and all sorts of social ills. It's going to take something much different than a few reforms that are, quote unquote, already in the works.
Harold, your thoughts on the search for a new police director. The first thing that occurs to me is that our first two police directors in Memphis, Jay Hubbard and Buddy Chapman, were civilians. Every police director since that time has come from the ranks of the Memphis Police Department. Your thoughts on the search for the next police director?
First, I guess I would certainly try to do a national search, because that way you cast a net and you do a sincere national search, because you cast a net, and just like Josh has said, we need a new vision and a new way of policing in Memphis. And the only way you get that is through casting a net that's outside of Memphis. And again, I go back to, I've lived here all my life. I spent, over now 35 years of service here. And over that 35 year period, all I've seen is the way policing is done today. And so to me, that hasn't worked. So you gotta find, even if it's somebody within the ranks, that person needs to be able to articulate what new policing will look like in Memphis and how that will get done, utilizing the current budget that's available now, or possibly reducing that budget. A lot of people have moved from different areas of our community. So the population in certain areas now are much less than they were in other times. So that particular process needs to be looked at as well. You don't need a whole lot of police in an area that doesn't have the same amount of people that it used to have at once before. So I do agree, a national search, but even in the ranks, that person needs to have a new vision and a new way of policing.
All right, let me send it back to Eric at this point.
I think, again, I think there are people, and I hear from them. I see them again. I hear them in person. I hear them in person as you can be during COVID. I see it in the comments. I see it in feedback on our site. That are we asking police to be social workers? Are we asking police to solve? And I'll go to you with this, Josh, I guess first. It's like we're asking them to solve the problems of poverty, of bad family life. And we're asking them, whereas what a lot of people want is they want to be safe. They want to feel safe getting gas at the gas station. They want to feel safe in their home. And I think that's the disconnect, that when people talk about these major reforms and all the problems with police, other people are saying, I'm just afraid. I'm afraid for my child. I'm afraid for my spouse. So how do you help me reconcile that for them, Josh?
Well, first I would say it's not easy. Like, this is not an easy solution. If it was, we would have found it. And I think we need to start asking ourselves, we have to rethink the whole thing. I mean, I think reimagining policing is a great, a great phrase, because that's what we need to do. We need to stop thinking about police in the way that we've always thought about them. Why does a person with a gun show up on the side of the road, right, if you're broken down? Why does a person with a gun show up when your loved one is in a mental health crisis? Why does a person with a gun show up when an unsheltered person downtown is frightening someone? This idea that there's an almost military response to so many of our social ills is the problem. And we are asking police, Eric, to do all of those things. They're at the tip of our social spear, and it's impossible. It's an impossible job. I have police officer friends. We've all talked to them, and we understand as well as we can what it takes to be a police officer. And it is not fair. It's not fair of us as a community to ask them to do that. So, but I think we need to divest ourselves of this idea that people with guns need to be responding to all these problems, and invest in ideas like social work, like community-based mental health care. The police service technicians are a great response to that, right? Sending someone without a gun to handle traffic problems. That's a great idea. Let's blow that up and take it into other areas like mental health and other places in this community where police are currently carrying that load. That's the kind of thinking we have to do. And that's the kind of leadership we need. And the new police director is one that will be willing to do that.
To you, Harold, a kind of variation on that question. You know, the Amy Weirich, district attorney for Shelby County, wrote a column for us this past week focused on juvenile crime and how we deal with juvenile crime. And you've been involved with juvenile crime, and points out that there were last year, I think this was 2019, 830 major violent crimes committed by juveniles, including aggravated robbery, rape, murder. People are so afraid, right or wrong, they're very afraid. And so when I think they hear you talking about all this change, they feel like, well, that's just gonna take us backwards. And that's a reason to be more afraid, not less afraid. But address that concern that I think people have with what you and Josh are saying.
I don't think that people would feel afraid, particularly with the Juvenile Assessment Center that District Attorney Wired presented. I mean, that was probably, a part of the Operation Safe Community Plan that I worked on when I was a member of the Crime Commission staff. It was designed to lessen the touch of a juvenile once they became involved with police if they committed a crime. That, to me, triggers the social works or the social workings that go along with life in our community. And I go back to what Josh said about policing. People want to feel safe because all they know is the crime that occurs in their community. But the crime for me is a byproduct of what's missing in the community. The crime occurs because as a young person, I don't have someone that I can talk to about my concerns and issues because there's nobody there but my high school basketball coach or football coach. As a father, I can't talk to my children, one, because the court has ordered me to stay away from them because of juvenile court issues. As a mother, I don't know how to talk to my teenage boy or teenage son when he's going through puberty and all of these other things that are happening in his life, because I can't relate to him as a woman and talking to a young male. I mean, all of these things are byproducts of the community we live in. What I submit to you is, and Josh is right, it is hard, but it takes courage as a leader to present a plan to address that, as well as a plan to address the crime. And that's where the rubber meets the road. When you spend 68% of your budget, let's make it clear, so our budget is nearly $700 million, and we spend 68% of that to protect ourselves between police and fire. There are no opportunities to address these other mishaps that go on in our community, and the pandemic has pulled that Band-Aid off to expose what we're dealing with. And when there's no courage to present those kinds of plans, this is what we have.
Just a couple minutes, I'll go to Bill.
All right. Harold, in your position with the Office of Reentry, what can you say about the current state of the Memphis Police Department, good, bad, or indifferent, no matter what your opinion is about it, and how that impacts things down the road in the criminal justice system, such as people coming out of prison and reentering society here in Memphis?
Well, here at the Office of Reentry, we are rebuilding the men and women when we get them. And that means really rebuilding them, sharing with them the real truths about their actions and getting them to understand that they have to take personal responsibility for themselves. And then secondly, once we get them through that, and that also includes mental health counseling, personal counseling, financial literacy issues, child support. But once we do that, then we encourage them to say, what is it that you enjoy doing that you want to continue doing? And let's put you on a path to that, whether it be welding, small engine repair, HVAC, whatever the case may be, because we have opportunities to help get you to that destination. but it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to persevere. You may have some pitfalls, but the pitfalls are there to train you to be persistent. With that, we train or encourage our clients when they come into our building to understand that the police is not your enemy, and you shouldn't treat them as your adversary, even though you spent a considerable amount of time serving or being convicted of a crime. They're only there to do their job. And if you understand that, then you'll be better off as an individual and a productive citizen in our community.
Josh, 30 seconds here. I mean, thoughts on repeat offenders and that cycle, which is such a big part of the violent crime problem.
Yeah, it's very difficult to break that cycle. The long tail of building up and investing in a criminal justice infrastructure the way we have for decades in this community is exactly what Harold and the good people at the Office of Reentry are dealing with. It is generations of people. It is hundreds. It is tens of thousands of people coming through their doors. And we have a disaster on the scale of the Titanic when it comes to getting people out and getting them back to work and getting them to not reoffend. And we're sending Harold and his folks in a canoe to do that. We're not investing in the things that work. We're investing in the things that create the problem in the first place.
On that ever so cheery note, we will end it because that is all the time we have this week. Remember, you can get past episodes of the show on the WKNO website at WKNO.org, or you can download the full podcast of the show from the Daily Memphian site or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.